You are listening to Podcasters of Horror, a podcast about exploring horror anthologies from film and TV, as part of the Super Network, with your hosts, Super Marcy.
And he just gave off, like, very creepy vibes, so you're always very unsure of this guy.
And the terrible Australian, Beat Germine.
Which, in that version, it's a Krusty the Clown doll that's harassing Homer.
This podcast may contain coarse language.
It just kept getting weirder and weirder, and it's, what the f*** is up with this house?
Adult themes.
You know, she's only just a little girl, but he really is very mean to her.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. For more information, please visit supermarcy.com or see the show notes. To show your support, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Please enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Podcasters of Horror. This is episode 36, and you're with us on the podcast where we discuss horror anthologies or horror adjacent anthologies from film and TV. And I'm your host, Super Marcy, and I'm glad to be welcoming everybody back to the Twilight Zone.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
And with me, as always, is my trusty co-host, the terrible Aussie, Beed Germine. Hello, Beed. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
I'm doing well. It has been a little while since we have been back in the Twilight Zone, so I'm very excited to be back and hopefully many adventures in the Twilight Zone for 2026 for us.
Indeed. Well, I'm looking forward to heading back into that Twilighty show about that zone, because we always have fun when we do discuss the Twilight Zone, whichever incarnation of the show we discuss. So I look forward to talking about the two episodes we're going to be doing today from the original run of the show.
Yeah, we are back to the original show. And if people have been following along with the journey, Beat and myself had only really seen a handful of episodes before this. So a lot of the time we are watching episodes for the first time. So it's always very exciting. But Beat, we have a special guest who is a big fan of the Twilight Zone, and I'm sure they have seen many of the episodes many times.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Marcy, we have a very special guest who is joining us today. And like you say, he is someone who is a big fan of the Twilight Zone, but also a big fan of wrestling as well. And that, of course, is our friend Brad Ryder. Hello, Brad, and welcome to Podcasters of Horror.
Hello, thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to this for a long time. So
it has been indeed a long time in the making. We've known each other for many years. I don't think your daughter wasn't born at that point. So
no.
So I pretty
she just turned 14.
Yeah, 14. So, yeah. So pretty much I've watched your daughter grow up. That's how long we've known each other. And finally we get to podcast, and well, yeah, it's not actually about wrestling, but maybe in the future we can. But it's about the Twilight Zone. So I'm very excited.
Well, Brad, I'm also glad that you're here as well. And we got two really exciting episodes to talk about today, Marcy.
Yeah, well, we sent Brad a list of some episodes that we sort of paired some episodes together. And you picked Eye of the Beholder and The Masks,
yep,
which was the pairing we had together. And we'll get to both of those momentarily. But just quickly, what was the appeal for you to discuss these two in particular?
Well, I know The Mask is probably one of my top five favorite episodes of the entire run. I think it's just a really interesting episode. And Eye of the Beholder is widely considered one of the greatest episodes of the entire run. So, and pairing them together is perfect for the themes of both of those episodes. So it was like, it was just almost a match made in heaven. So,
well, I'm really glad that you did. I hadn't seen any of these before, but I knew of one of them more than the other. And we'll get to the first episode we'll be discussing, which is Eye of the Beholder.
I want you to remember this, please. Miss Tyler, are you listening?
Yes, I'm listening.
Now, we have done all we could do. If we've been successful, well and good, there are no problems. But if, on the other hand, this final treatment has not achieved the desired result, please remember, Miss Tyler, that you can still live a long and fruitful life among people of your own kind.
Eye of the Beholder is episode 42 of the show from season 2, episode 6. It was directed by Douglas Hayes, written by Rod Serling, starring Maxine Stewart, Donna Douglas, William D. Gordon, Jennifer Howard, and Edson Stroll. The plot for this episode: a young woman lying in a hospital bed, her head wrapped in bandages, awaits the outcome of a surgical procedure performed by the state in a last-ditch attempt to make her look normal. And in doing the opening narration for the episode, and I will sound nothing like Mr. Serling, so forgive me. Suspended in time and space for a moment, your introduction to Miss Janet Tyler, who lives in a very private world of darkness, a universe whose dimensions are the size, thickness, length of a swath of bandages that cover her face. In a moment, we will go back into this room. And also in a moment, we will look under those bandages, keeping in mind, of course, that we are not to be surprised by what we see, because this isn't just a hospital. And this patient, 307, is not just a woman. This happens to be the Twilight Zone, and Miss Janet Tyler, with you, is about to enter it. So we will kick things off by asking me, what did I think of this episode? This was the one that I had known about previously. As you mentioned earlier, Brad, it is probably one of the most famous of the episodes. Very iconic twist and imagery. So it's one I've wanted to watch, and I've kind of been waiting for it to be kind of picked to discuss for the show. And I definitely can understand why it is a like highly regarded episode, one that's really memorable. I think what impressed me so much with this, and this is going to be me being a little bit technical, is it's really shot and framed so cleverly, but really pristine. Like, you do not see faces, things are in shadow. It adds to the mysteriousness of what's actually going on, like who Miss Tyler is, what this hospital is. And I really like how there's the dialogue heavy scenes, but things, you don't see people actually talk, and it just adds to the mystery. And I think even it being a little bit obvious where it's kind of going, and this is a show from the start in the 50s into the 60s, there were definitely spoilers, but even knowing where it's going, it's still such a really well done episode. And I think on that technical level especially, it really impressed me. And when we get to the twist, yeah, it's expected, but I think how it kind of plays out is interesting. And I have to say, the makeup effects when we do see everyone is really well done, especially for the time, knowing the limitations and budget. They looked really, really good. Bede, I think you hadn't seen this one either.
I haven't seen this episode either, but like you, it's one of those Twilight Zone episodes that is, you do hear about it a lot because, like Brad said earlier, it's one of the more iconic and classic episodes of the show. So I've heard about this one for quite a long time. So I was very eager to watch it and do it for the show. Because you know me, Marcy, I do love talking about the more classic episodes to kind of see how they compare and to see if they live up to their reputation. And I think with Eye of the Beholder, there's definitely a lot I like about it. Like you say, I love the sort of the way the episode is shot in terms of its framing, its themes with about conformity. So I think it really does that really well. And also the performances are quite strong too. But I think my only problem with this episode, since it is an episode that is always talked about a lot as a classic episode, obviously you would already know what the twist of the episode is. So when it does happen, it doesn't really hit as hard as it could have. But also too, even if I didn't know what the twist was before watching it, I would have easily figured it out pretty quickly. It's because as great as the framing and how the episode is directed, with other than our main character who has her entire head bandaged, all the other characters for at least two-thirds of it are all in shadow, or at least their faces are, or you never get a clear look at their faces, I would have easily figured out what the twist was right away. And even though, yes, I think Rod Serling does a good job with tackling the themes within the story, but I feel like the twist is so easy to figure out that it kind of isn't as impactful as it could have been. So I think it's a solid episode overall, and I could definitely see why it has been regarded as a classic of the series. But for me personally, like a few other classic episodes we have talked about on this show, knowing about it for so long and then finally watching it, it doesn't really kind of hit it as hard as it could have been if you went into knowing nothing about it. But
I feel like that was kind of what you said about To Serve Man. Another kind of very iconic episode with the twists. Obviously, it was in The Simpsons. So I think I can understand that aspect of it for you, because it wasn't the first time. I think The After Hours was another very obvious one for you.
Yeah, that's what I mean, Marcy. Like, you're starting to see a pattern when it comes to some of the episodes of the show when I discuss them, because like, it's really like the ones that people don't really talk about that I seem to gravitate towards, while the more classic ones are, I'm a little bit more critical of. Not to say that they're bad episodes, but I guess, yeah, like knowing so much about them, there's nothing about them that surprised me when I sat down to watch them compared to, I guess, the more lesser known ones that are that the show has made.
Brad, what are your thoughts on this? Well, coming from someone who's seen it a number of times, I'm sure.
Yeah, I grew up watching Twilight Zone marathons with my dad, New Year's or different holidays and such. And this was one of those ones that was on a lot. And I remember when I saw it early on, it wasn't one that I really enjoyed. I guess it was just because there was not a lot going on. They're just in the hospital talking a lot. And so there's not a lot of action. But the older I got, and the more I watched it, the more I thought it was just interesting just watching all the little intricacies of the episode. And as Bede mentioned, with the twist is, I mean, you kind of also have to think like, all right, it's the Twilight Zone. So what is really going on? What is the twist with this woman underneath all these bandages? And then, but when you first see it, it hits you hard, especially if you're early on or if you don't know the twist, you know, what's coming, something weird is going to come. So when it does come and it's almost not weird, you're like, wait a second. And then you have the double twist of what they also look like, which also is a little impactful on that. But yeah, I thought it's incredibly well shot. The acting I thought was really well done. You know, she has to act through bandages through the whole time. And so you can't see her emote You can't look, you get none of these facial expressions that you would normally see. So the inflections of her speaking and when she's getting the news about, oh, they can't do the surgery anymore after this. This is the last time. And so you have to, you can't see on her face, and you know, that she's disappointed that they can't do anymore or that she's sad. You have to listen to what she's saying. So I thought that that's incredibly well done. This is really more, besides the way it's shot, it's more of an acting episode more than anything. I thought the acting itself was really, really good on this one.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because of how it's shot and framed, like as you said, she's covered up with a bandage most of the time. So she's acting through being covered up. And I was going to say, I think people like, what, Boris Karloff as the mummy kind of had a bit of that, or Claude Rains as the Invisible Man. You kind of think of those things, how like it's wouldn't be easy. So, and yeah. I think that performance is really strong, but I think everyone around as well, because we're not really seeing them. We're not seeing their faces. And I have watched this episode a couple of times because unfortunately we've had to delay recording. So I have watched it. And I feel like the more I've seen it, the more I actually really appreciate how it's actually structured and shot, but also just how good the performances are. And I can understand Speed as well. Like, yeah, it is kind of obvious. Like, she's like your idea is she's probably going to look like we do, and they're going to look different. It's the Twilight Zone. I think it's sort of how the reactions to each other, but also the bigger story being told. Like, the episode is called Eye of the Beholder. And during an episode like this coming out at a time when you've got where there was segregation and civil rights, with that as kind of a backdrop, you can understand where something like this is going, and almost, is it really, like, is it necessary, or are humans just destined to, if anyone looks slightly different, that's it, you're done? So I think at the end of the day, for me, it's the messages and everything else that is around it, rather than kind of focusing on the twist. And I think I've gotten that just from watching it a couple of times as well. So it might not be my favorite episode, but I feel like this is a 20-minute piece of TV that you can learn a lot from, just in terms of structure and how to film and frame things, and giving like strong performances without the use of like your face. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of almost German expressionism in the way it's shot, with the angles and the hallway, when they're going down the hallway and the shadows, how they use the doors and everything. It reminds me a lot of like a Caligari or something like that.
Now that you say it, I'm like, absolutely. Beige. I know we've sort of shit on you going, meh, you whatever.
Well, that's the thing, though. I think the strongest aspect for me of the film is definitely the performances. I think the cast all do a really good job in their roles. And it's interesting, though, kind of looking at who was in the episode, it didn't occur to me just now that the character of Janet, who is our main protagonist in this story, she's actually played by two different people in the episode. Because you have Maxine Stewart, who plays the character under the bandages. And then you have Donna Douglas, who is the Janet that's revealed once the bandages are removed. But from what I understand, I believe Donna Douglas did the voiceover for those scenes where the bandages are over her head. And honestly, I would not have guessed that it was two separate actors playing that role. So I think the episode does a really good job at hiding that. And also the makeup design for everyone else once Janet's bandages are revealed is pretty memorable. Like that image of the makeup, again, it's one of those things like I saw it way before I'd seen the episode, because that sort of iconic makeup design from the show. But also too, Marcy, looking into more of this episode, did you know that the 2000s revival of Twilight Zone actually did a remake of this episode?
Yes, I'm aware of that. I haven't seen it. So that will be one we will have to, maybe the three of us can come back and cover that.
Exactly. And also too, what I'm, actually, I shouldn't be surprised by this, but if, on IMDb, it is actually the highest rated Twilight Zone episode ever on IMDb.
Which is crazy, because I would have maybe put something else there, but I'm not saying this one isn't good.
Yeah, well, I guess for our audience out there, just to kind of show, like, what is the highest rated. So I'm going to go from 10 to 1. So you got The Shelter, which is 8.6. The Obsolete Man at number 9 with 8.6. It's a Good Life, which we have done on this show, which is 8th place with 8.6 as well. In number 7, Living Doll, which we have done for the show, which is 9.7. In number 6 is Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up, which is 8.7.
Hey, I'm the real Martian. Hi.
Then number 5 is The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, which is 8.9.
Love.
Then 4 is Time Enough at Last, which is 8.9.
Which we haven't covered on the show, which is
a
shock.
That's a great one.
It's
that's
another
great
classic. Yep. Yeah.
Then number 3 is To Serve Man, which is 9.0, which again we have done for the show. Then number 2 is Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, which is 9.0 as well.
Again, we haven't
and of course,
that yet.
Yep. And then finally, number 1, Eye of the Beholder, which is 9.1.
Oh. Interesting.
So, yeah, it's kind of surprising that this is the highest rated episode of all the Twilight Zone on IMDb. But again, I shouldn't be surprised because even though, yes, I have my issues with the episode, it is still a classic episode regardless. So it doesn't surprise me at all. It's in that top spot.
Yeah, it's an interesting list. Mine would be different, but I think that's what makes things great is everything is subjective. But I guess we can kind of wrap up the discussion on Eye of the Beholder with a rating out of 5 and some last little words. My rating for this is 4 out of 5. Pig face people. I may or may not edit this out, but I kind of thought they were all MAGA.
Well, I mean, you could.
I think we should keep that in, but.
I mean, to be fair, Marcy, I think if this episode was remade today, you could easily make it a commentary about the MAGA movement.
With that said, I really enjoyed the episode, having now seen it a few times. And I feel like it was one that kind of grew on me a little bit. Like, I noticed a few more little details and things that I appreciate a lot. I think it's got a really interesting message behind it. And also when you take into like when it was made as well, you can definitely understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a classic for a reason. The twist obviously is that memorable, but I think, yeah, the thing that just really gets to me is just how well it's shot and just handled with everything. And again, like, the performances are really strong. And again, like, as you pointed out, Bede, you've got two different people, but the way that you have to kind of act without showing your face is pretty strong as well. And just with the acting from the other, like, the rest of the cast without really seeing them until the end is really good. But yeah, I give it 4 out of 5. Beat.
I'm going to give it about 3.5 out of 5. I think it is a very solid episode on its own. Maybe not a classic to me, mainly due to the fact that, again, it's so easy to figure out in terms of where it goes with its story. But it is well made. It is well directed. The cast are all really good in their roles. And I do like the themes that Serling is exploring with the script in regards to conformity, which I think I handled quite well. So yeah, not a classic for me, but still a really good episode overall.
And Brad?
I'd probably go with this, with the 4 as well on this one. The act, it's really held together by the acting and the idea of the story. And like you said, the makeup is fantastic when they take off the bandages and you see her and she's beautiful. And then you cut to the first shot of the doctor and it's the extreme close-up of him. And he just has this pig face. And then it goes to one of the nurses and just just really well done with the makeup. And the idea of the story is really good. Like, it's just, it's one of those ones that I'll watch it anytime it's on. I'm not going to go skipping it, but it's also not one that maybe I'm going to go out of my way to, if I'm looking for something to put that episode on as opposed to some of the other ones. But it's really well done. It's one that I would show somebody who hasn't seen the show before to give them an idea of what Twilight Zone really is all about. Solid 4 out of 5. Is really good episode. Not spectacular for me, but definitely can see why it's considered a classic.
Yeah, definitely. And the closing narration for the episode. Now, the questions that come to mind, where is this place and when is it? What kind of world where ugliness is the norm and beauty the deviation from that norm? You want an answer? The answer is it doesn't make any difference because the old saying happens to be true. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In this year or 100 years hence, on this planet or wherever there is human life, perhaps out amongst the stars, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Lesson to be learned in the Twilight Zone. And for our next episode, The Masks.
What is it, Father?
It's what you've all been waiting for, I believe, Wilfred. Now you can dig deep in the treasury.
Are you feeling weaker, Father?
At last, a note of hope in your voice, Emily.
Why must you always say such miserable, cruel things to me?
I quite agree, Father.
Why, indeed, Emily, because you're cruel and miserable people. Because none of you respond to love.
This is episode 145, season 5, episode 25, directed by Ida Lupino, written by Rod Serling, starring Robert Keith, Milton Seltzer, Virginia Gregg, Brooke Haywood, Alan Suze, Willis Bushi, and Bill Walker. And if I butchered any of those names, I apologize. The plot. Dying millionaire Jason Foster invites his greedy Boston heirs to a Mardi Gras party where they must wear the masks he had custom made for them, or else be cut off from their considerably large inheritance. And our opening narration. Mr. Jason Foster, a tired ancient who on this particular Mardi Gras evening will leave the earth. But before departing, he has some things to do, some services to perform, some debts to pay, and some justice to mete out. I don't know how to say that. This is New Orleans. Mardi Gras time. It is also the Twilight Zone. I'm going to hand it over to you, Beat.
Indeed. Well, I was very much looking forward to this episode in particular because it was directed by Ida Lupino, and I've seen a film that she directed called The Hitchhiker, which is a great, great film noir. But she's directed other films as well, but she's also an actor and has starred in many films and TV shows. And also, she's the only woman to direct an episode of The Twilight Zone as well, at least in the original incarnation. Mm. So I was very intrigued to see this episode. Again, like Eye of the Beholder, this is what I do believe I have heard about for a while. I think one of the things I really like about this episode, because I think like a lot of us here, who doesn't enjoy a good episode where the rich get their comeuppance?
If only we could do that in real life now.
Indeed. So I think this was a really fun episode to explore that idea. But also Robert Keefe, who plays Jason Foster, I think he does a really good job as this man who is on his deathbed, realizes all the mistakes that he has done in his life and realizes that his family are basically just after his money. So basically he decides to kind of rectify that and to basically kind of show what his family are really like. Hence that he creates all these masks that they have to wear. And they have to wear them for a certain number of hours while the Mardi Gras is going on outside. And if they manage to keep them on until midnight, they'll get all of his riches. So I think the performances are really strong in this episode. The writing is really well done. And yes, you kind of know exactly where the story is going to go here as well. But I feel like there's a lot more interesting elements going on in this one compared to Eye of the Beholder. And I just really just like this one overall. And since Ida Lupino, at least for me, who, since I've seen quite a number of her work, is a really strong director, and I think she brings a lot to this episode that makes it stand out. But also, too, there are definitely elements about it that I liked where we kind of see the other family members. Like, they're all pretty much stereotypes of what rich people are like. Although I have to say, though, Wilfred Jr., how could he be the son in the family when he almost looks older than his dad in the episode?
How he aged back then.
Well, I mean, that is very true. As we would all say, even on the To Be Tuesdays podcast, he's a hard Canadian 30. But yeah, I really like this episode overall, so I'm kind of curious to hear what you both thought of it.
Over to you, Brett.
Yeah, this is, like I said before, this is one of my favorite episodes. Being a horror fan, this one really was in my wheelhouse more than the previous one. The previous episode that we spoke about, it was more like I brought up the German expressionism. It was more of that type of horror, but this one was like the kind that I love. And there was just something about it that just clicked with me on that. And I guess watching it originally and just the twist ending, I thought was one of the coolest things that I had ever seen. The story is, it's a cool story. Nothing too out of the ordinary, like Bede went over, the rich dying grandfather wanting to, was going to leave all his money if they could leave the masks on. And you're kind of wondering, okay, something's going to happen with these masks, but what is it that's going to happen? Is their faces going to melt, or what's the twist on this one? And you just see them all squirming, and they want to take the masks off before midnight. And it's just so cool just to watch them all reach this end. And they really do, like, there are some episodes where for whatever reason something bad happens to someone good, and you're kind of like, oh, that, you feel bad for them, you don't know why, you know, what they do. But this one, you see, okay, they really deserve what they got at the end. So you end up, it's kind of a downer ending in this, in the fact of what happens to them, but you're like, all right, they definitely deserved it in the end.
Yeah. I actually didn't really know anything about this episode before going in, so this was all new to me. And I like that there's this tension and anxiety just through this whole episode. And I think it's just very much, I think, credited to how the dynamics of this family work, but also how the performances were, because I think they were so spot on with, as you said, being sort of stereotype characters, but they kind of fed into it. And I think it's probably one of my favorite, I guess, acted episodes, because I just think everyone is so on point with everything, even if the son looks older than the dad at some points. But it's an interesting concept that they're there, there's a Mardi Gras party, and they're having to sit there for a few hours, and literally all he said, just keep these masks on. And to his family, it is the most torturous thing ever. And I think the tension is just like, something's gonna happen if depending on what they do, but I'm sort of like, I don't know quite what it could be. I thought maybe there was like poisoned masks or something. Part of it I do feel like was a humiliation towards them because of just how awful they are. But I think it's the tension of watching it unfold and waiting to see what happens as well. And even on rewatches, I think it still plays really well, where it's not so dependent on what the twist is going to be. It's, I think, the joy of watching it unfold with what it does. And then with the twist, it's they are going to look like what these masks are. The masks have become their face. So interesting with the previous episode with the kind of pig faces, and they kind of end up with similar-ish faces, and it's just all because they can't not, well, I mean, they cannot avoid being selfish and greedy. So I think it's a really good episode. And as you said, Brad, it's you do get episodes where bad things happen to good people, but the bad things are happening to bad people, so you're not really that upset about it. And you almost feel like, yeah, this is kind of justified, because I'd probably do worse if that was my family. But I really like that it was kind of a different-ish episode. Almost a quiet-ish episode, but there's this, almost would say it was Hitchcockian in a way, with certain elements. And that is actually a show we definitely need to talk about, which is the Alfred Hitchcock anthology show, which that's one I've seen some episodes of and definitely would be keen for more. But yeah, it kind of had that feel to it. But the masks are unsettling, to say the least. And I would not be happy if that's how my face ended up, but I wouldn't be an asshole like those people.
Well, also too, Marcy, I just had to laugh. It's like, you just got to wear a mask for a few hours. I mean, I've worn masks in my time for a few
just
hours.
Just imagine if this was 2020. That's all I'm going to say. We know people cannot stand wearing a fucking mask. Not to get political or whatever you want to call it on this podcast, but
well, I mean, to be fair, Marcy,
proved that this is very possible. Just saying.
I mean, don't like what. I mean, the same people who did like wearing masks in 2020, for some strangely reason, like to wear masks when to arrest immigrants in 2026. Yeah. So I'm just going to leave it there. But also, too, I think it's interesting about this episode because, again, once the masks are all taken off by everyone, they kind of reveal what the person really looks like. Mm-hmm. But I love the fact that when the doctor comes in and removes Foster's mask, his face is completely normal. And then pretty much the last line of the episode is like, this must be death. No horror, no fear, nothing but peace. So I really like that in terms of like what the mask kind of revealed of Foster, because he was no longer afraid of death and made his peace with it. So the way that at least how it resolves for him is actually quite well done. And also, again, though, the other members of the family have to live looking like baboons assholes for the rest of their lives, so it's hilarious
and well deserved, I have to say. But yeah, the whole thing of sort of your inner self being present in the outer self, that reflection of the ugliness of these people, it's I think it's just a really well done thing. Like, it's, but by these days it's not anything new, but the way I mean looking at it from the lens of the present day, it's just really well done. Really, really well done.
I don't think there's anything that's lacking on it. It's a strong episode. The acting is really, really good. The story is great. Just everything about it. And just to also go back, you know, talking about with Mardi Gras, it's like you hear that, they're in this house with the masks on. They're hearing these people have so much fun outside to add even more to them squirming. It's like they want you that they want to get out of there and get down to the street to party as well. And they can't because they have to keep these masks on
The
for
mask.
the entire night.
It's such a great episode. Like it really it surprised me like in a good way. But yeah, ratings out of five and final thoughts. Speed.
I'm going to give this one about a 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed this one a lot. I think it's well written, acted, directed. And I just love when the really rich kind of get their comeuppance in the end. And I feel like those type of stories are always very satisfying. So, and this one kind of ticked all the boxes. And I think Ida Lupino just brought a lot as a filmmaker to this one. So yeah, this one's a 4 out of 5 for me.
Brad.
This one, I'm going with a 4.5 out of 5. Like I said, this is one of my favorite episodes. This is one of those ones that I will go out of my way to throw on if I'm just looking for something. If it's on during one of the marathons, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to sit in front of my TV, whether it just started or whether there's 5 minutes left. It's one that I have to make sure that I'm there for. It's just a fun episode to see these people get what's coming to them. And I mean, they have all this money now, but are they going to want to go out and spend it and interact with people now with the way that they're looking? They can't enjoy it. So it's really fun to see them get what they deserve.
I'm with you, Brad. I give it 4.5 out of 5. I think our scores were the same for both episodes together, B being like half a star behind. But yeah, I really enjoyed this a lot. I think I agree, like with what you've said, like, yeah, these people getting what's coming to them is so worth it. But it's just really well done. Like, it's something seemingly simple, but there's just a lot kind of going on. And there's a, I got to give it to, again, the direction is just so good. The writing is really strong, but the cast, like, they pulled this off really well. And yeah, they're stereotypical kind of characters, but I think they just add something a little extra to it. That makes it very intriguing. But yeah, there's debts to pay and justice to hand out, and it's also the Twilight Zone. And our closing narration for the episode, Mardi Gras incident, the dramatis personae being four people who came to celebrate and, in a sense, let themselves go. This they did with a vengeance. Now they wear the faces of all that was inside them, and they'll wear them for the rest of their lives. Said lives now to be spent in shadow. Tonight's tale of men, the macabre, and masks on the Twilight Zone. So I do think the contrast of these two episodes, just in terms of with Eye of the Beholder, that everybody looks like the pig people, and now these people will be the outcasts for kind of looking like the pig people. It's kind of interesting and bizarre, but also very fitting as an interesting double feature with definitely some very interesting themes going on. So I'm.
Yeah, Eye of the Beholder, you have this person who she looks normal and she doesn't want to, and she wants to look like all, everyone else. And these people, they look normal and they're going to end up looking not normal, not by their own accord, but by someone else's doing.
It's such an interesting contrast. I'm glad we did these two. It's a good, interesting pairing. And that's the beauty of our podcast.
Although, if you want to take a very dark route, watch The Masks first and then Eye of the Beholder, and you realize, oh, the rich people, they have to be ugly now. So now they have to make everybody ugly.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it
And
was
that's
the
how society
prequel.
it is. And also, too, I forgot to mention in our discussion, is it just me, or was one of the masks meant to look like the pig people mask in
I think
Eye
I
of the
thought
Beholder?
that as well. If it was, or it means it's either way, it's an interesting nod.
Mm. Exactly.
But yeah, I think that's a wrap on the episode. It was an absolute joy to discuss these two episodes with you two. And I'm so glad we got you on the show, Brad. And
oh, yeah.
We'll definitely have you back. We may need to do a Twilight Zone episode where we cover the remake of Eye of the Beholder and maybe find something else interesting to pair that with, because I'm kind of intrigued to watch that episode now. With that said, we can be found at supermarcy.com. Podcasters of Horror is available on all your podcast streaming platforms. So if you're not already, subscribe, like, get your updates, leave us a comment. If there's any episodes we haven't covered that you want to see us cover, if you want to join us for an episode, let us know as well. The Super Network is on all the social media platforms, and you can find, I'm trying to remember all the things, Beat, if I forgot something, you can mention it. Patreon, we have early access and video versions of To Be Tuesdays at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. And me personally, I'm on the social media occasionally under Super Marcy and letterboxed under Super_Marcy. And I kind of need a letterboxed like thing where I can just like write my reviews and like rate all my Twilight Zone episodes.
Well, I
need
mean,
the Twilight app, the Twilight Zone app for that.
I know there's a TV version of Letterboxd out there, but I can't remember what it's called. So maybe that's something to look into, Martin.
Yeah, I just need the Twilight Zone version. Stick off all the episodes. Beat, where can people find you and all the rest?
Well, people will find me out there on the internet. You can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd under Beat Jabide. You can find all my work and as well as all the other amazing podcasts, Marcy, that you and I host together for the Super Network on both supermarcy.com and on all podcast streamers everywhere via the Super Network podcast feed or each show's individual podcast feed. But also you can listen to my solo show, Beat versus the Living Dead, on all podcast streamers everywhere as well.
And Brad, where can people find you?
I am on the Hellspawn app known as Twitter. You can find me there. You can either search for at Ace of Joshi, or my display name is Big Beard Booty Daddy, which is also what you can find me at under for Blue Ski. I'm over there as well. And if you want to find me on Letterboxd, I am Eggers Life, as in Robert Eggers.
Yes. Love it. And definitely check it out. If you are into Joshi wrestling, Brad is the person to check out, and he will know all the other people to put you in contact with. So definitely check it out. And yeah, hopefully we'll be back very soon with another episode of Podcasters of Horror. And I'm very excited to continue our Twilight Zone journey. So until next time, we're probably in a worse version of the Twilight Zone in 2026. Goodbye.
See you, everybody. Bye.